Okay. 112581 AB versus Housing Authority of South Bend, and it's Mr. Hull. Hi, Mr. Hull. How are you?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Kent Hall from South Bend. The appellant would like to raise 2 points. First, specifically, whether the Anti-Injunction Act prohibited the district court from issuing an injunction, and secondly, assuming that the act did not prohibit an injunction, whether or not the district court abused its discretion in saying that it would not issue the injunction. There is a third question raised by the appellee as to whether or not the case is moot. I think that's been addressed by the briefs. I will not address it unless the court would like for me to do so.
Well, I'd like you to address a different basis for mootness than was argued here, and that is that the state court has already issued the eviction order, and that horse is out of the barn. And so we can't grant the relief that the injunction sought?
Your Honor, the argument which the appellee made in this court about mootness was that the district court had dismissed the original complaint.
Right.
But in fact, there is an amended complaint now
right.
Pending.
Right. So the case is not moot. There's a live controversy. This federal case.
Correct.
There's a live controversy. But the relief that the injunction motion sought, and that's what we've got on review here, is the denial of the injunction. The relief that was sought was an injunction against the state court's issuance of an eviction order, and that order has already been issued. And so that action moots the case, or doesn't moot the case. It moots the controversy that's before us now, which has to do with the preliminary injunction to forestall the eviction.
Well, Your Honor, I think the state court order is under appeal to the Indiana Court of Appeals.
Right, but it's a final order.
It is.
So we can't give you the relief that you want against that order.
Yes, the relief we want is to prevent them from litigating in state court when they're required to file a compulsory counterclaim in federal court.
But that litigation has already reached final judgment and is concluded. The fact that it's on appeal doesn't unmoot the case, or unmoot the appeal, I should say. The case, the underlying case,
the
is
fact
still
that
ongoing.
Your Honor, the fact that it is under appeal in the state court system does not means that it is not a final judgment in the state court system.
I don't think so. It's a final judgment. It's just on appeal.
That's correct. But the issue that Your Honor is addressing is whether or not this litigation should go forward in federal court or in state court.
Not the underlying litigation. That's a live controversy. You filed your amended complaint in the district court, and I'm not sure what the status of the motion to dismiss is on that. But what's before us on appeal is just the order denying the injunction, and it's too late for us to grant you any relief on that or to order the district court to, because the eviction order has already been issued and final judgment has been reached in the state court eviction proceedings. The fact that there's an appeal doesn't matter for our purposes. So what you want us to do, we can't give you. So the appeal's moot.
I take it your view is that because Judge Simon dismissed the case with leave to replead, and the reply brief indicates that a First Amendment complaint has been filed, I take it that your view is that unless and until the case is dismissed with prejudice, the preliminary injunction is not moved. That's your view, right?
Your Honor, it is our view. And I would also say that in order to reach any question about the preliminary injunction, whether it was the point that Judge Sykes was making or the issue that Your Honor is making, we have to address this question of the Anti-Injunction Act. Judge Simon, Chief Judge Simon, took the position that he could not, that he was barred from issuing any kind of order on the merits because of the Anti-Injunction Act. He then went ahead and said, if the Anti-Injunction Act didn't prevent me from doing that, I would still deny the preliminary injunction for the reasons that he gave, which were comity, equity, and federalism. As I understand the, again, and maybe I've misunderstood the appellee's position in this court, but as I understand the appellee's position in this court, it is that the case is moot under one of this court's earlier decisions where there had been a dismissal of the earlier case, a dismissal of the complaint, and then facts came up which in the appeal had not been pleaded in the original complaint. Our issue on our position on that point is that the operative facts with respect to the Anti-Injunction Act and with respect to the injunction, our request for the preliminary injunction, are still in effect and before the district court.
Right, and you may be right about that, but we're not limited by the mootness argument that was made by the defendants in this
Correct.
Case. We have to address this on our own. And the mootness problem that I have just identified, it seems to me, doesn't have a sufficient answer, or at least I haven't heard one yet.
Well, the answer that I would try to give to Your Honor is this. It was our position in the district court that the appellee defendant was required to file a compulsory counterclaim. They did essentially, under Rule 13A, the compulsory counterclaim rule, they essentially did an end run about around that rule by filing after we had filed in federal court their action in state court. What we are faced with is a case in which, and I don't think any circuit has ever said this before, district courts have, but I don't think circuits have, that a defendant can essentially nullify the compulsory counterclaim rule of 13A.
Right. I understand that to be an argument about an exception to the Anti-Injunction Act, not a response to my point about mootness.
Your Honor, I think it's an argument on both points. In other words, you're right. It is clearly an argument with respect to the Anti-Injunction Act, and the district court rejected that argument on the basis of several district court opinions that have also rejected it. But it is also an argument against on the issue of the preliminary injunction because we think that it weighs against the equities that the district court applied.
Right. That goes to the merits of the preliminary injunction decision. It doesn't address the mootness argument. All we have here is an order denying an injunction to prevent the state court from entering an eviction judgment. That's what we have before us right now. The eviction judgment has already been entered. We can't give you the relief that the motion sought. You got to address your arguments or readdress your arguments to the district court given the current posture of the case.
Your Honor, the request we made to the district court on the preliminary injunction was not that it enjoin the state court, but that it enjoin the appellee from litigating in state court. And that issue continues to be a live issue. Again, as I
you're into your rebuttal time, you know.
I'm sorry?
You're into your rebuttal time.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Thank you.
You can do it if you want, but I mean,
No, I'm going to stop. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Come up, Mr. Palmer.
Got away from you, didn't it?
It did, yeah.
Your chin was going to hit it.
It's not too far for it to go. May it please the court. if I may address the mootness issue that Judge Rovner raised, and that is, this appeal is also moot because the complaint upon which the motion for preliminary injunction was based has been dismissed. Now, it was dismissed without prejudice, and the plaintiff was given leave to amend that complaint and has amended that complaint.
Right.
But that's the same situation that this court faced in the Dempsey case that we cited in our brief. And in that case, what happened was there was an interlocutory order on appeal, and during the appeal, the district court dismissed the complaint. The plaintiff was given leave to amend and actually did amend the complaint. And the court held in that situation that the appeal of the interlocutory order was moot because of the potential for confusion and ruling on that that appeal, given the amended complaint being pending. And I think that same interest exists here. For example, on appeal, AB has argued that he made a request for an accommodation, or I'm sorry, that his mother made a request for an accommodation during the immediate possession hearing that happened after Judge Simon denied the preliminary injunction motion. In other words, the basis, the request for an accommodation that has become the basis of this appeal actually wasn't before Judge Simon when he was deciding the preliminary injunction motion. And basically, AB has conceded that at the point of the motion for preliminary injunction, there was no request for an accommodation. And without a request for an accommodation, the Housing Authority had no obligation to enter into the interactive process or to provide his mother with an accommodation.
Right. We're limited to the record as it existed at the time the decision to deny injunctive relief was made. So anything that happened afterwards, it can't form a factual basis for our review. But we don't have a moot case. The case is a live controversy. It's ongoing. If the appeal is moot, it seems to me it's by virtue of the fact that the horse is out of the barn in the state court litigation. The eviction order has been issued. It's reached final judgment. The case is on appeal. We can't grant the relief that the particular motion that's before the court sought, before our court now.
I understand what you're saying, and
so
I agree with you.
It's a more discreet mootness issue.
And the point I'm making is that there is another reason for mootness, the reason described in our brief. I agree that there is a live controversy in the district court. But this appeal of an interlocutory order has been made moot, our argument is, because the court dismissed the complaint upon which it was based. And we cite the Dempsey case for that position. And in Dempsey, there was still a live controversy at the district court.
Right.
There was still an amended complaint there.
I'm questioning whether that's the correct procedural ruling.
Okay. Well, there are other circuits, we cited two of them in our brief, that have reached the same ruling. And one of the decisions, I believe it was the Ninth Circuit case, I believe it was the Silva case, the 2011 case, holding that an interlocutory appeal and while the appeal was pending, the complaint was dismissed.
Without
was mooted,
prejudice?
Was mooted by the dismissal.
With prejudice or without prejudice? That's the key distinction here.
Yeah, in other words, was it a final order or not?
Right.
Yeah, and I don't know the answer to that. I believe that it was a final order, Your Honor.
Okay, then that makes all the difference in the world.
Okay.
Okay.
And I'll just point out, though, that Dempsey, as far as I know, still remains good law here, and that case there was not a dismissal with prejudice. Moving on to if the court were to not conclude that this case was moot, and if you move on to the merits of the claim, there are substantive reasons why the district court should be affirmed, namely the Anti-Injunction Act and the principles of equity, comity, federalism prevented this district court from granting the relief that AB sought, and in addition, AB completely failed to meet his obligations to satisfy preliminary injunction standards. And I'd like to point out a few things. First of all, AB has argued during this appeal that the express authorization exception to the Anti-Injunction Act applies to his Americans with Disabilities Act claim, Fair Housing Act claim, and Rehabilitation Act claim. But AB did not raise that argument at the district court. As the district court's opinion states, AB barely addressed the Anti-Injunction Act in written briefs. In the written briefs, AB only addressed the in-aid of jurisdiction exception. And then during the oral ruling, just before Judge Simon orally ruled, AB did raise the express authorization exception, but only with regard to his 1983 claim. Therefore, AB did not raise the express authorization exception to the Anti-Injunction Act with regard to his other claims, and therefore has waived that argument here.
And Judge Simon did note the Mitchum case and that got those 1983 claims, or is there maybe just one in this case, into an exception to the Anti-Injunction Act.
That's right, Your Honor. And so
we went to the next step of the analysis.
That's right. So Judge Simon essentially concluded that the express authorization exception did apply with regard to the 1983 claim, but for reasons of the second step, that he still could not issue the relief that was sought. Now, in opposing counsel seems to argue, and AB seems to argue, that the court, by denying the preliminary injunction motion, somehow decided to not exercise jurisdiction over the claims, but that's just not the case. And AB has cited this Atkins versus VIM recycling case for the proposition that the district court was obligated to exercise jurisdiction over the federal claims, and that by failing to enjoin the state court essentially nullified AB's right to litigate the federal claims, but that's not the situation here. Atkins involved a situation where the district court dismissed the federal lawsuit completely based on principles of Colorado River abstention and Buford abstention, and was reversed on appeal. But that's not the situation here. Obviously, the district court continues to handle this case, and it continues to be litigated at that level. Also, I'd like to point out that AB argues that because he filed his complaint first in state court, in federal court, that first-in-time rule applies to this situation, and AB cites the Farragher case to support that position. But that case involved parallel state lawsuits, and there the state court held the first-in-time argument had some merit, but that argument doesn't play in here, doesn't at all address the Anti-Injunction Act, and that the issues that are involved with the Anti-Injunction Act here. And then just a few points on the actual substance of AB's main claim, which is that the Housing Authority had an obligation to provide his mother with a second chance. First of all, that wasn't requested, as I mentioned before. Second of all, AB came forward with no evidence to show that his mother was disabled. In fact, she's a current drug user at the time that the Housing Authority sought to evict her. It's undisputed that she possessed cocaine a month before the notice of eviction went out. It's also undisputed that that she used illegal drugs in 2011 prior to entering rehab in March. Therefore, she's a current drug user, and she's not entitled to protection under the ADA, Fair Housing Act, or Rehabilitation Act. And then finally, the requested accommodation is neither reasonable or necessary. And it's not necessary because just even if AB's mom is a former drug addict, that former drug addiction doesn't compel her to possess drugs. Therefore, there's no causal nexus between the alleged misconduct and her disability. And what she really seeks here is a second chance. And for the reasons I just explained, as well as those in our brief, we request that the court either dismiss this case or affirm the district court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Hall, how much time does Mr. Hall have?
You know, normally I do give extra time, but I can't do it today. It's one of those days.
I understand, Your Honor. The appellant status of the mother of AB, she is enrolled in a court-supervised drug rehabilitation program in good status, was so at the time they evicted her, and she is protected by the Fair Housing Act and the Americans with Disabilities Act. The point about the Anti-Injunction Act, I believe, we're reading it very differently, but that the district court stated that it did not have jurisdiction to issue the preliminary injunction. Secondly, the first-in-time rule applies only to Indiana cases, so that an Indiana court should have dismissed because the federal case was filed first. I thank the court for its attention.
And I thank you, Mr. Hall, and I thank you, Mr. Ogden, and I'm sorry, Mr. Palmer. And the case will be taken under advisement. We're